Good morning, everyone. This is the August 5th special meeting of the Improvements Committee. We start with comments from the public. Anything, Amelia?
No hands raised, no chats.
Great. Improvements monthly updates. Ron?
Oh, maybe he's experiencing technical difficulties. I will go and get him.
Yeah, I don't see him on the call. We'll give him a minute to figure out his problems here.
Yes, indeed, technical difficulties. I have Ron with me now. Here he is.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, sorry about that. I was reading.
And we are right here with the monthly updates.
Okay, so water treatment plant, sodium hypochlorite conversion project. As you can see, that's being put on hold. We had Daryl with Demichelli and Associates come out. That was in my previous report. We were going to have them do a structural and installation inspection of what was done because it was kind of done off the cuff. So he came up with quite a few hazardous conditions and things that need to be taken care of. So that will be on hold until we move forward with his recommendations, which partly is having the alum and the chlorine in the same feed room, using a joint trench as a drain. Both of these together can cause gas that would be fatal to somebody going in. So at this time, it will be on hold until we can remedy that. So that's where we're at on that hypochlorite. Hopefully this winter, we can take care of the upgrades that need to be done.
Hey Ron, if you don't mind me jumping in real quick, this is Tom. We also have that recent funding from the state to pay for the hypochlorite conversion for the water treatment plant. So we're leveraging, we'll put that out to bid instead of doing it ourselves. We'll have it done by a vendor, but we'll leverage that vendor hopefully to help finish the work that Daryl is going to design. Basically, they're going to review it in great detail and then provide it what they would consider be the as-built of the system, into their design. So that'll be just to let the committee know that's kind of how we're going to time it for now. But I don't think we can take that, we can't take that system offline while the DAFs are running. So we have to wait until we're done with our recycled water delivery system this year. That's all.
So these two problems, the storage and the trench. Were we working off a set of plans that came from a licensed engineer, or how is it that we got ourselves in this spot?
I can't really answer that question precisely. Director Jinko, I know that we had designed it ourselves, and we were building the project with our internal staff at the time, and we don't have as-built plans. We don't have an engineering plan. I believe we utilized the vendors who sold us the equipment to help us put it together. But prior to taking any further steps, I requested that Domenichelli, well, we had one of our employees pointed out that we had alum and hypochlorite in the same room. That was probably not the best result. As soon as I heard that, I asked Domenichelli to send somebody out, and they sent Daryl to give us a report, which we received earlier this week.
So before we start the next the next funded similar project, I would hope that we're going to get an actual design with some drawings and a stamp on it, that so we don't find other problems along the way.
Yes, that's the plan.
Absolutely the plan.
Great.
I would concur with that. We just don't want to go down this road again. I would think that for all the projects and that money we're getting from the state should go down that same path.
That is exactly the plan.
Great. Go ahead, Ron.
So we had Tesco out here to do some telemetry work. And when they came out to remove the, they call it a chisel. It's a screen with a graph on it. And they were converting all that over to the SCADA system. They found some other problems as they were doing that. It was still all covered under their agreement with their bid, but they found some issues in the way it was wired. When they did that, they had to do some rewiring of a few things to get it to the SCADA. And when they did that, the screen didn't come up right. The trending isn't quite to what the chisel did. So they will be back when they are gonna install the WIN 911 system, which is the call out. And they will finish upgrading that to where it's supposed to be. So that is still scheduled for probably about three more weeks when they get the 911 system in and programmed. So we're still waiting on them for that part of it, although the system is working as it was before. So that's where we're at with Tesco on that. And any questions on that?
No hands, no chats.
Okay. So we already talked about Domenichelli, Daryl coming out for that site visit and his report. On July 19th, Olin Corporation was out here, who's going to be the delivery of the hypochlorite chlorine for the tanks. Also came out and did an inspection on some things there of our piping, and they are going to also give us a report, and we will put that with the Daryl with Domenichelli's report and make sure we have a correct system that is safe for all to use. And that's that. And then so the East and West dissolve air flotation system, East DAF's been up and running for a month. West DAF was put online in July 22nd. We're running full tertiary water to the golf course now. We're still still waiting for one pump to come in. It's still blamed on the COVID virus for the delay. Even though without that pump, we can run them both. It's a backup pump. So we're okay for now. And I'm happy we're running the all we can to the golf course and supplying water we need to supply them. So that's where we're at on the East and the West DAFs. Are there any questions about the developments?
I had one.
Go ahead. Is that Marty?
Yeah, this is Martin.
Hi, Martin. Go ahead and ask your question. Thanks for coming.
On Riverview, it sounds like they're close to getting going. Has the issue with the fees been resolved?
The issue with what?
Fees.
You mean that this is, are you talking about the FSA 670 obligation?
That was one of them, yeah, right.
We've issued a demand letter to them with the assistance of our legal counsel for them to pay the amount in full by the end of next week. I have yet to get a response back from the developer. And then as far as their fees for just the development project, we're still on track with that. We're okay with that.
And I assume all the plans are approved then?
Well, there's still, I believe Joe still has some plans to go through when we get to the final plans for their sewer and drainage, but right now they're just gonna do the mass grading, and those plans are approved by us and by the county.
Okay. Okay, so that answers my question. Thank you.
Yeah, in the interest of not spending all morning in these meetings, we're kind of wondering if people had a chance to look at these projects, any particular projects they have questions about, just like you did, Marty. Thanks.
Were there any other questions about the development portion of this report?
I'm just curious about Rancho Murrieta North. It looks like, I mean, we're talking about anticipating completion of sewer plans next week, and we're waiting on studies and so on and so forth. Is this, I don't know if John's on the call here this morning, but is this,
yes, I am.
Is this project still on hold with the county? And
no, it's never been on hold, Randy. Unfortunately, Mark Martin didn't understand the way things work down there. Until each and every one of the studies is in, they accept them, they distribute them to the people to review, and the remaining studies there were three studies that had to be finished when Mark Martin said that it was on hold. Those were ongoing. It was the traffic study, the greenhouse gas study that has to wait till the traffic study's done. And then we've been waiting for a long, long time now for the district's review of the sewer, water, and drainage plans. The traffic study's been complete and submitted and accepted. The greenhouse gas study has been submitted and accepted. And as soon as we get these water and sewer and drainage plans in a comment position, then the staff downtown will issue the notice of preparation if they choose to do a new one. They don't necessarily have to do that, but we're expecting them to do a new notice of preparation, which we'd like to do. We'd like to get it out this month. And if we can, then there'll be a 45-day period, and then the environmental document will start and probably be done early spring, mid-spring, somewhere around there. I don't know if the county's going to subcontract out the environmental document or whether they'll do it themselves. They have a lot of staff changes over there. They've promoted people. Jesse Shen, who was our contact person, has been promoted to a zoning administrator, and so there's a new Rancho Murrieta lead person. And so it'll take them a little time to gather their thoughts on whether they want to sub it out or do it themselves. So yes, these three items from the district are time crucial at this point to get down to the county or get into the conversation about handling it. We asked the district if they would consider villages A, B, C, and H as the current projects, and then D, E, F, and G as being the further out timeline-wise. So that's kind of where we're at.
When you say it's in our hands and you've had these discussions, are you talking about Domicelli?
Yes. Yes.
So I was in a meeting with the county planners last week, and they also used the term, we asked about Rancho Murrieta, yes. And they actually used the terminology that the project was on hold. Are we all talking past each other on this, or are we just?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, on hold because they're waiting for the study to come in. They can't do anything. They can't move forward because everything else has been received. Bad terminology.
What about
our application's been in there, and our $250,000 deposit has been there since 2014. So
what about this sentence in here that's been here forever that says we are waiting for the revised drainage study and model that was requested by Coastland?
I think this is between Baker Williams and Joe on the drainage. I think the water and sewer review is imminent. And then Mike will typically sit down with me, and then we'll sit down with Joe. So that's the way this should go in the month of August if all goes well.
Okay. Famous last words, if all goes well.
Randy, this is Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
I'm in pretty regular communications with Joe McKelly, and what is here is correct. The sewer plans are almost ready to go. He's ready to go on the water plans next. I have not seen any. John, you said something about you've given direction to focus on A, B, C, and H right now, and D, E, and F, and G as a second phase or whatever. I have not seen anything really formal on that. And if I did see something formal, I forgot. But did you write a letter or write an email or a memo or anything like that?
Meeting, the last meeting you, Joe and I and Mike were in with Cindy. Yeah.
Okay.
When we discussed, you know, like drawing a line down the middle of the A, B, C, and H on the left side, and D, E, F, and G going out further because of the drainage, you know, the drainage technology that is always evolving in regard to making sure we don't get any contaminants into Clementia.
Okay, and that's what my knowledge was, is that it was our discussion when we met there at Joe's office. Okay.
Martin, anything on that topic?
Nope.
Okay, good. All right, let's move on to discuss activities related to the E-Staff. This is the pump. Okay. Ron?
Number four, discuss activities related to East and West dissolved air flotation system.
I think we covered that
in the monthly update.
In the monthly update.
Yeah, you're right. My bad. Discuss director of operations recruitment. Is this Tom?
This is Tom, yes. I'm happy to say we've tendered a tentative job offer to a director of operations here at the district. That offer was verbally accepted. Can you mute everybody real quick?
Yeah.
The offer was tentatively accepted, and we're going to do a background check on the gentleman, and we have a physical process. So we have a onboarding process, and that's beginning today. So it's been a few months since Paul left, and Travis and Ron have done a great job of keeping the lights on, keeping things moving forward here. So I'm sorry about the blower behind me. So I'm hoping by the end of the month, early September, to have the gentleman on board and moving forward from there as we work towards all the big projects we have going on in the district infrastructure and water and sewer operations. Any questions?
Okay. Tom, did you want to touch on the additional positions that we talked about this morning in personnel? Maybe just briefly explain where we think we're headed.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you, Randy. As once Paul left and we started realizing that there's a lot of institutional knowledge and functionality with Paul, I commissioned an organizational study of water sewer operations. And the gentleman, we worked through a company called Municipal Resources Group. They're pretty well known in Northern California for having a lot of good experts on their team. And so we hired a gentleman. He came out, spent a day with our staff doing a lot of interviews, looking at everything. And he's given me a draft report. And one of the key elements of the draft report is he thinks we really need to consider adding a position of another chief plant operator and have our chief plant operators be able to focus on the whole sewer operation, one for there and one chief plant operator focused entirely on water. And this is discussion that has been going on for a little bit around here. And he just validated the fact that we're not just a small little water district anymore as we grow to become an urban water supplier. And as we continue to have issues with the manganese and things like making sure our sewer treatment plant is running on time, running up to speed, those positions need to be separated. And, you know, when Paul left, we did not have the certifications required to sign off on our monthly sewer reports. It requires a wastewater operator 4 license, and the highest we have since Paul left is a wastewater 3. So it's really critical that we have the right person in place running each of the plants and letting them focus entirely on either water or wastewater. And I cannot tell you how proud I am of Travis and how hard he is working to balance both plants at the same time. But it's really too much for one person when you're considering providing fresh drinking water to 6,000 individuals. So that report will be formalized. It will come to the improvements committee next month. That wasn't a very quick explanation, sorry.
Yeah, I got to revise my definition of brief. But no, thank you for that. Any questions or comments on that?
No hands raised in the chat.
Hearing none, let's move on to the Rio Oso pump replacement. Ron?
Amelia, you're muted.
Here we are.
There we are. Okay, so we wanted to install pumps that were like what we had. So MuniQuip was the one that was able to give us a quote for that. We did go out for 3 quotes, 3 bids. One person just verbally over the phone said no, and one person sent a letter, thank you, but it's a little bit out of their scope of work, even though they're a pump company. So MuniQuip is the one that got the bid. So they will be, it's a two-process thing. They're the ones that have the job. They will be providing the pumps and the motors, and they will be contracting out another company to install them. These pumps if you can see right there, the current pumps installed at Rio Oso Tank Site are obsolete. One was rebuilt about 5 years ago that was built out of three different pumps to make one run. And that has been the main pump for the last 5 years, running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to keep the pressure zone with water. So we've been working on borrowed time. I did see back in the archives, this has been looked at for about the last 5 years, but nothing went forward on it. So this is something that really is critical that we get these things taken care of. To get the pumps in, it's about a 10 to 18 week lead time. So by approving this, we can move forward with getting that order in and getting those pumps here. Part of that project will also be replacing the VFDs at the same time when the pumps are replaced. That's a different CIP project number, but it's all tied together. So that's where we're at with that. As soon as we get it approved to move forward, we'll get those pumps ordered and hopefully have this project done before December. Winter time is when it's the optimal time to do it. We're using less water because of less irrigation and that type of thing. So that's the plan as it is right now. Is there any questions on that?
Martin, anything?
Randy, can I ask a question?
Certainly. John?
So Ron, the variable speed drives are a follow-on after you've got the pumps in. And these are to keep the pressurized system pressurized all the time out of Rio. So is that right?
Correct. Yeah, the lead time on the VFDs isn't as long as the pumps and the motors. So that's why this is here today, so we can get that moving forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Martin, anything?
Yes, I thought it was a good idea.
Okay. Tom, are we approving this purchase or are we recommending approval to the board?
You're going to recommend approval to the board.
All right. Sounds like we don't have a problem with it, and that such will be the order. Moving on to the purchase of a new sewer jetting machine.
So the jetter we have right now is a tier one as far as air pollution control is concerned, and it is out of date, and currently we can only use it 80 hours per year. That limits us to the amount of sewer lines we can do maintenance on. We'd like to save some of those hours for emergency situations. This is something that is definitely needing replaced. It's a 2002. It's not quite 20 years old, but getting real close. It's asset for the district to maintain the sewer lines, which is actually required of us to do so much jetting and sewer cleaning per year. So with that 80 hours of limited use, that limits us quite a bit. So we went out with bids on that. We got three bids. We wanted to have a piece of equipment that was like what we had, that was able to do what the one we had could do. One bid was too high. One bid was real low. You'll see that in the packet there. It was not the piece of equipment that we were needing. Actually ran off of two separate Honda motors. So it wasn't what we needed. U.S. jetting is what we have now. U.S. jetting happens to be the one that is getting this bid. And they were the only ones that would actually hold a bid for us through the end of August. So you can see the pictures of the old one there. The new one is more up to date, has an enclosed engine. It'll be a little quieter. We do get some complaints about the noise sometimes. It will only have one sewer cleaning hose off the end of it, which is the same size as the green line, which is 5/8, which is capable to do up to, I believe it's 18-inch line is what they claim. So that should do the district pretty good. So my request is that we approve it here and then approve it with the board.
Anything on the question, Martin?
Yeah, it seems like a good idea. Are we keeping this old machine as a backup?
Oh. No, I would not recommend that because it's the new. So this one, part of the situation with this one, it's like 50.2 horsepower that creates a lot of paperwork with ARB. And the new one we're getting is 49 horsepower, which brings it down to the limit where we don't have to deal with ARB. So anything 50 and up, and that's like 50.2. So I would recommend that we surplus this one out. It's not reliable. If it stayed parked, you know, the ability to get it out, get it going in an emergency would not be a quick type thing to get going.
Can you rent one if you needed to in an emergency?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
So like if we had one and it went down, we could.
Ron, what does surplus it out mean? Is this going to end up at the dump, or is there another market for it?
Oh, yeah. Randy, I'll answer that question. There's a company that is recommended by CSDA, Special Districts Association, to utilize for surplusing equipment. And we have not utilized them before, and we're going to cut our teeth with this company on the surplusing of this jetter. So they'll put it up for sale, and when somebody buys it, they'll give us a little, you know, they'll give us our cut.
So it ends up in Nevada or Mexico is what you're saying.
Probably. Yeah.
Okay. Martin approves. I approve. So let's move this on to the board for board approval.
I appreciate that.
And we will move on to update on hole 14 culvert replacement.
So the RFP for hole 14 culvert replacement has been completed. The packet is, or the RFP is out and posted for bids. We sent it out to a couple of other companies directly that we've dealt with that do good work for us. So we will wait for bids to come in, and they are due.
They're due, I want to say, like August 28th or something. I have it all timed so that it can go to the Improvements Committee in September and then the board in September for approval, because we want the work to start October.
The last week of October.
The golf course is shut down for maintenance. So that's in the RFP requesting the companies to be able to work and be out there when the golf course is closed for maintenance that week.
Who did the drawings for this, Ron?
Well, is there's not really drawings for it. We're just pulling out the old and putting in new. The RFP and the work for this was put together by Andres, who's one of our annuitants that's here. He's an engineer. So between him and myself, we put this together.
Did they, as part of the package, did you make requirements on golf course traffic and making sure that golf carts can go through at all times and so on and so forth?
There will be because the North Course will be closed that week. We'll be able to go in, and they're going to go through two different golf cart paths for the course itself, but we've been told that they will not be used.
So the golf course is closed that week. That's interesting. What I guess so then the requirement in the RFP is that they complete the work within that week.
The majority of work is supposed to be completed that week. We are having head walls and rails installed at the inlet and outlet. That may be worked on a little bit after that first week. At that time, the golf cart paths should be back in place.
Okay. Any comments, Randy, or questions?
Yes, please.
Go ahead, John.
Randy, you're a golfer, and on that hole where that culvert begins is about 10 feet from the out of bounds stakes. So the drainage enters the country club's property, and then there's about a, I don't know, 10 to 12 foot channel bottom, and then it enters into two of the old corrugated culvert pipes. It looked like they're, I don't know, 18 or 24 inch each. Ron, I don't know what size they are, but is it possible that the head wall could be on the out of bounds line, the actual property line, so that the drainage comes in and there's a head wall and that the entire length of that culvert is underground? It's a real funny little area for the last, 45 years, where you don't know whether you're in the ditch or whether you're out of bounds when you're over there. There's giant redwood trees that block the view of where you end up when you hit a ball over there. If we had just an out of bounds along there and no little tiny circular water hazard, it would certainly be better to do that, I believe, than to have, now that, since we're going to be there to do the work, I would assume it's less than a length of pipe for each. Are those going to be HDPEs to go in there?
Correct.
Anyway, just I asked the question because I think it's an area that's always been a little bit of an issue.
John, this is Tom. We worked closely with the country club on this in large part to make sure we have the timing exactly correct, so we don't interrupt the business of the club as much as possible. I think what you're saying is a really good idea, and we'll take a look at what that means as far as our bid. We did spec out the length of the pipe and such as that. So it might be we have to tweak the bid a little bit, or when we talk to the vendors, let them know we want to make a change. But
yeah, I agree.
Go ahead.
I agree. I think that's a great idea because I hate hitting over into those red trees and ended up in that hazard area. So I'm all for it. But I guess the question that's going to arise here, Ron, is you go out with this RFP and how that ditch lines up with the line of the pipes going across the fairway, there may have to, depending upon that, there may have to be an angle point that makes some sense to get the head wall where you want it to be along the out of bounds line. But it's certainly doable. And maybe you just, since you've already got the RFPs out and you're getting pricing, maybe it's just a change order to the low bidder.
Yeah, we can go, we can take the RFP and we can do an addendum to it. It's just a simple addition of a short memo with maybe a little bit of picture or diagram change.
Yeah, a little more pipe and a little more backfill. And I think it actually ends up being a cleaner look there.
So I think what we would want to do is we would want to have Andres and Ron meet with somebody related to the golf course who can handle discussing this idea, so we can get a satisfactory change put to the or addition put onto the RFP webpage or RFP site. So
well, you've got the owner on the line who thinks that it's a great idea. I would suggest that we go straight to the country club manager and meet with him out there and explain to him what the thoughts are and make sure that he doesn't have a problem with it.
Okay, John Sullivan, do you want to coordinate that, or do you want us to go directly to Randy?
No, I'll coordinate it with Randy and you know that Scott's leaving, you know. So Andre would be the guy.
Yes, well, Andres is on our team. So Ron and Andres would meet with you and whomever you have in mind.
Well, Randy will be able to take care of it.
Okay.
Now, we'll contact Randy. These head walls also have wing walls, and we were armoring the up the banks about 20 feet with that Sierra limestone. So I don't know, we probably will be mitigating some of what you're talking about, but probably getting out and getting a visual look at what you're talking about probably be best.
Yeah, and you're gonna, those are probably estate lots along there. You may, if you're gonna rock up that channel, we may have to get the property owners involved, but it's all doable and it's a great idea. So I say go for it.
Okay. Well, we will contact Randy. I'll have Ron and I contact Randy.
Martin, thoughts?
Thank you.
I had two. John alluded to the fact that he wanted to move it to the property line. How's the contractor going to find the property line?
There are red stakes where the hazard is, and there are white stakes along the out of bounds line, which is the property line. And I've been out there to look at it. There's a couple of stakes there. I'll get Baker Williams to flag it right to the property line if that is something we need to do before we take some pictures. That makes sense?
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Last question is, what's the value of all this? What do we think it is?
Well, you know, go ahead, Ron. I know you've had more discussions than I have.
Well, the CIP, I think, if I remember right, is about $34,000. Mm. We kind of got an engineering idea that it probably, and that, because that was done back I think in 2015. We have a better idea that it's probably going to be somewhere between 50 and 60,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We are supplying probably 80% of the pipe for it. It was purchased for that already. Back in 2000 and near 14. So we do have that pipe that we'll be utilizing. So it'll be a good question as to what it comes in at.
Okay, thank you. So one last question. Are you taking advantage of this project to also clean out the ditches?
Well, the ditches are a whole different issue. Now, the ditches right there, we will probably work on somewhat. For the most part, the influence side of that ditch is pretty inaccessible, but it will be taken care of quite a ways up. And then on the effluent side of it, we've done quite a bit of work there, but there's still a lot of rocks that have been put on the banks that are falling down into the ditch that we will be at this time also pulling the rocks out of that ditch.
I mean, updating drainage is always a maintenance issue, and seems like if you're disrupting the site for this project, you might as well disrupt it to do the maintenance.
We've done a lot of maintenance on that, on the effluent side of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still quite a few rocks. When we get that big deluge of rain, tends to bring rocks down into the ditch. But we've had the back over there several times, pulling out silt. And the thing is, we don't want to dig them any deeper, because then you end up with a hole there where water stands. And if you start dragging them out, you got to take it all the way down to Laguna Joaquin to keep pulling from them or ponding.
Okay, so thanks.
It's a matter of just keeping obstructions out of it.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Any other comments or questions on this topic, Amelia?
No hands raised, no chats.
All right, let's move on to discuss residences east and west development. Is this you, Tom?
This is me. Let me get down to that page. Basically, I wrote a short memo. John Sullivan put together a bunch of work on calculations and water balancing and all this stuff, but to introduce the subject, then I'll let John talk a little bit and we'll go with the questions. But John submitted a report that he put together over the past couple weeks, which is included in this memo, on whether or not there's gonna be enough effluent going into our wastewater treatment plant that results in the amount of recycled water that was estimated to be coming out of the district as development increased. And the calculations back in the day were that the homes were gonna be producing a lot more wastewater than the reality is. And without wastewater coming into our plant, we don't have recycled water. And so based upon the discussions that we've had over the past few months, and somebody needs to put their, I guess, mute everybody again.
I'll mute everybody.
So based upon, you know, all these discussions, the work that John has done, and some of the realities that we've learned about how much wastewater we actually produce per household, we're recommending that we take forward to the board of their request to get a waiver from being required to provide recycled water to the residences east and west lots. Furthermore, I'm asking that we take a really good look at whether or not we even want to believe anymore that we're going to have enough effluent to create recycled water to run up to Stonehouse in Escuela Park, which is the design that was made many years ago. If we don't have water to put up there, then we shouldn't spend back then I think it was about $2.7 million, but I think it's probably clearly into the mid $3 million today of infrastructure to take water from here, run it up the hill when we don't have water to put in the pipes. And the infrastructure is expensive in large part because the design has us rehabilitating or replacing the water tank on top of Lookout Hill and having all the mechanics and pumps and valves and pipes that are required to get the water up there. So it's kind of a two-prong request. One, they want to get waiver for having to produce to create a recycled water system in their development. And two, I want the district to take a hard look at, do we want to spend $3 to $4 million on a system in the future that is never going to be used, given the fact that people naturally are conserving water. I mean, the calcs, the amount of effluent coming out of every household is way over calculated in these studies. Now, and you'll see below, and John will discuss it, and he'll start throwing these numbers at us that nobody else but John understands as quick as he says them. But it's clear that we're not producing that much water and we that much effluent. And we should go back and hire or re-engage the consultant and say, okay, change these numbers to reality and let's see how much water, effluent water and recycled water we're actually going to produce at any given level of build out. And so having reviewed John's work and having been listening to all this all along, I'm recommending that the board consider their request for waiver. And I'm also recommending that the board direct me to reevaluate our recycled water plans over the next 6 months or so and revise the plans. And now that development is here, have something that really is legitimately a realistic approach to what we can do with recycled water. And trust me, within a few years, recycled water is gonna be, and it's already happening, be put back into the drinking water system. And in a few years, we may not ever have a problem with where to put our recycled water because it may be after the golf course gets their batch of water that the balance of it may end up in Calero and legitimately eventually becoming our drinking water again. There are a lot of projects right now going on throughout the country in doing these exact things. So I don't think the district needs to spend all this money, and I don't think the residents as East and West should have to build an infrastructure that'll never get used. Those are my comments. John, do you have anything you want to say, or Bob?
This is John. I appreciate the review of my work. There's a few things that everybody needs to understand as far as understanding the system that we have. The first is that every October, around October 15th, we try very, very hard. And I think only in 1 year that I can ever remember, we have less than 100 acre feet of water in our secondary storage reservoirs. That's crucial in order for those secondary storage reservoirs to be monitored during the winter, even if we have a 100-year return event. And I'll talk about that a little bit later, but understanding the system is a little bit complex because we're dealing with variability of weather and rainfall. And clearly the district has become much tighter in regard to INI infiltration and inflow that ends up at the wastewater treatment plant from the manholes. I know in the 2010, 11, 12 era, we were tightening everything up. And at one time we were generating 500,000 gallons a day into the wastewater treatment plant. And now we're lucky to get to 440. So we've reduced the, yes, yes.
No, I will gladly go to the parts of your wonderful done. If you tell me where to go, then we can follow along and have a visual to go with what you're saying. That might help it sink in a little.
Yes. Okay. So let me go back to page 2 on this, and that really speaks to
okay, here we go.
The fact that I'm looking at the secondary storage, first of all, and then what that yields for the golf course. And then at the very end, which we'll get to at the end, is the study, the one-page study that talks about how much water the golf course actually needs. So I reviewed, it's not on page 7, but it's on page 8. I reviewed all of these documents, acquisition service agreement, the 20 by 20 study on page 8.
There you go.
The country clubs agreement, there you go. Planning for future droughts, went all the way back to 1990, looking at what the volumes that Ken Giberson projected way back at the beginning. The original integrated water master plan, the HDR study, sewer study, the update of the integrated water master plan, the recycled water standards. By the time we got to the recycled water standards, this idea that we had 315 gallons a day coming from every residence to the water plant had started to drop down to around 210 gallons per day. But by the time we looked at the last 10 years of modeling from the actual information the district reports on a monthly basis for the last 10 years, even without considering the commercial activity, you just take the residential headcount or customer count divided into the average dry weather flow, it's around 159 gallons and has been for almost the last 10 years, except for one anomaly year, which I'm still not sure why we jumped up over 500,000 on average for that year. But if you go to page 3, back to page 3, the 3.34 acre feet per day that was predicted.
Okay.
The 1,219 acre feet has been reduced because of density and because of the difference between the 210 gallons and the 159, to the point where we expected over 1,200 acre feet of recycled water, and we're going to barely get to 800 at full build out. And I mean 4,490 homes. And I'm not clear where that house count's going to come from. I'm using every dwelling unit as if it's the same, because across the average, it's always been 159 for the last decade. So in a nutshell, that 35% difference is just was stunning to me. I thought it might be 20%, but it's fully 35% difference. So again, we've averaged down the flow rates, and we've tightened up the system. And again, I described the district practice of the 100 acre feet. If you go down a little further on that page, and then we get to the irrigation demand and then the evaporation. And down at the bottom of page 4, it shows that the pan evaporation for Folsom Lake is 66.18. And I think the district reports about that amount every year. Last month, Ron reported over 10 inches, the pan evaporation across a 70-year average was about 9.19 at Folsom Lake. So during the critical irrigation period of May through September, the evaporation in all of the lakes, and that includes Bass Lake 16 and 17, 10 and 11, and the secondary storage reservoirs, even though the secondary storage reservoirs are 32 acres, we're evaporating off of surface area of 48 acres. And if you take 40 inches on 48 acres, we lose 160 acre feet of recycled water that just gets evaporated. We never get to use it. That kind of blew my mind when I did that number. And so if we get into the page 9, you can see 9, 10, and 11 basically talk, 10 talks about what I just said, which was the what study said what back when. But page 9 is really what happens in a typical year. So we assume on page 9, that's page 10, I believe. Can we go back to 9? Yeah, let's start up at the top of that. So if we have 50 acre feet as carryover on October 15th, the October 15th to March inflow plus normal rainfall would give us 468 acre feet in secondary storage at March 31st, less the evaporation plus infiltration of about 10% on what's flowed in during the winter period would give us about 480 acre feet. However, I showed in red here that the 100 year return event adds 47 acre feet. So even if we go to maximum, we don't go 19 inches, we go to 100 year event, the only amount of water that's going to be in the secondary storage as of April 1 is this 527 acre feet. So scroll down a little bit, Amelia, there you go. So April evaporation plus April inflow, May evaporation plus inflow gets us to 626. If we do not take any water out of secondary storage, we use the river pump to augment until we get to June 1. Now that would not be standard operating procedure, but this just shows you how dramatic a difference it is. If we don't use the river pump, we wouldn't have made it through the year. But we used the river pump and we got to the point where the golf course recovered from the shortage early in the year. But if you scroll down a little further, you'll look at what happens in the dead of summer. So here you go. June, July, August, September rainfall for 4 acre feet is all it. Less 154 acre feet of evaporation, plus the inflow to the plant at build out volume of 2.19 acre feet a day eats up all but 100 acre feet when we get to September. And then October, the inflow is still, the first half of October is still the same rate. The golf course use is about half because it's half of a month. And we're back down to secondary storage of 100 acre foot or less on October 15th. And that's getting the bonus of the 42 or the 47 acre feet at a 100 year event. If you look at the next page, you'll see from the standpoint of where we are versus the old studies, and then go on to page 11, Amelia, which shows the other current users. Van Vleck Sprayfield is 215, but Van Vleck, the other easement that Van Vleck has gets us way more than that. The Murrieta Residential is expected to only use 13.8. The Murrieta Gardens Commercial currently is about 12, but it'll grow a little bit more. Retreats West, Tom and I worked on this yesterday. I think this is pretty darn close. 5.7 acre feet is what's used at Retreats West. Retreats North and East will use, we scroll down a little bit further on that. It will be about 9.9 acre feet for the remaining 62. Right now they're intending to put in the purple pipe. And I don't think we want to change that unless, Tom, you have some other thoughts on that. But, we still have never notified the Regional Water Quality Control Board that we have these extra locations to take recycled water. And honestly, we don't, there's no need right now to be in a hurry to do that, but there probably isn't a conversation that needs to happen with them in regard to reworking this water balance. So let's go down to that single sheet at the very end. Thank you for getting it turned in the right direction, Amelia. So on the left-hand side, way top left, where it says normal year, that's 19.59 inches of rain, go straight down. Average dry weather flow is 713,000 gallons a day at full build out, which is 2.19 acre feet a day. Secondary storage is 32.2 acres of surface area. The other ponds and lakes are 16.13. The next column over is what Folsom Lake has reported. If you look at the gray section, that's January to December. You scroll down just a hair. That's January to December, and that'll be your 66.18 inches of evaporation. Pan evaporation is they stick a pan out there and they just measure what evaporates. And everybody says that it probably needs to be plus or minus, or probably minus 10 to 15%. But if you actually look at the EVO, if you go over the three more columns, you see EVO at the top. That's the evapotranspiration rate that's reported by San Luis Obispo, Cal Poly. And I just highlighted the middle section. That's April, May, June, July, August, and September. And if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll see that that modifies how much how many inches of evapotranspiration you need at the very bottom. So if you just use June, July, August, and September, it's 31. If you use April, May, June, July, August, and September, it's 44. It's very easy to figure. 44.66 inches is almost 4 feet, and we're irrigating almost 233 acres. So if you take, 233 acres by 4 feet, you're at 932. The actual number when you calculate the rainfall less the evaporation ends up being about 812 acre feet. Well, we're not going to be at 812 acre feet of production in the reclamation plant for a long time. So if you just drop down to the bottom, the country club seasonal use for just the June, July, August, and September, right below that in the orange color, is 637. And right now, I think Ron reported that we wouldn't be much more than 468 this year. So it's again, seasonal issues are going to create adjustments that have to be made on how much water we pull out of the river. And certainly I think there's a strategy that might be able to take water, the riparian water rights that the district has, or the country club has on its lands, and put water into Clementia from the pumping plant in normal years, so that we don't have to do something extravagant and expensive when we get to the tail end of the season, or when we need water early in the season, we can replace it with riparian water at the pumping rate, which would be about $39 an acre foot, rather than something that's much more expensive and labor intensive. So that's all the study I could do in the time I had. There's tons of data that just tells me we're rather than spend $4.5 million to send water up to residents east and west, the country club's going to be probably eating up, 24 out of 25 years, everything that is possible to produce. Thank you.
Thank you, John. A lot of numbers there. I'm certainly no expert, but I followed most of that and I kind of studied it. And I don't know about the the minutia details of all of that, but in general, I do agree with your conclusion. Martin, do you have any questions for John or comments about his work?
No, I did have ask a question for Tom. What did Bill Michelli have to say about his review of it?
Joe has not reviewed this work.
I thought that was part of the plan here. I think the board should have some sort of a sanity check on all this. It looks like it's headed to where John is pointing us, but I think before the board votes, then you should have Domicelli just do a sanity check and say, yeah.
Well, I think that's a great idea. And I do not believe that John nor Bob Kyle is the one who has a deposit on file. I do not believe he would object to utilizing some of those funds to have Joe go through these numbers and do some validation. Are you cool with that, Bob?
That's fine with me.
Okay. I'll talk to Joe later today. Marty will have what you're looking for by the time we get to the board meeting.
Sounds like a plan.
Now, did everybody get their take home test on John's math problem?
You guys.
You gotta be a calculus major.
My dog already ate my test.
So I don't have anything really specific about the analysis and the month by month thing. I follow it. I get it. It's based on an average daily usage, which you're using the 159 gallons per day, and it comes out of a July report. Is this something that's on our website, or is this?
Yes. Every month, Ron reports the average average flow into the wastewater treatment plant. So like last month, I believe the number was 414, Ron?
I don't have that in front of me.
But anyway, every year, if you look at where what we use in the month of July for the last 10 years, that's the dry weather period. You can use June, you can use July, you can use August. Any one of those 3 months is typically the average dry weather flow. Right now, I think it runs around 440 on average. And you divide that by the number of residential units we have, and it ends up being 2,760 residential units. Is that about right?
Yes.
So 2,767 units now generate 1.33 acre feet a day. 4,490 units, which is what I say is the most we're ever going to deal with at build out, are going to use 2.19 acre feet a day. So the things that screw that up is the wet season. And we have certain days, Ron, confirm for me this, like when we get a 3 inches of rain in 2 days, our average wet weather flow might jump up to 900,000 for 2 or 3 days. And then it drops back to, 500, and then ultimately comes back the longer between storms you have, close to the 440. So you have to calculate how many weather days you have and what the 100-year event is as to rain that falls in and evaporation that goes out of secondary storage. And that INI number has always been around 10%. The 100-year I went beyond the 100-year on the report, but the amount of additional water or wastewater that ends up the wastewater treatment plant doesn't average significantly more because we have about, I think, about 22 rain events a year. I didn't go into analyzing each and every rain event and going back and tying it to the certain months in January, February, and March where we have the heavy rains. But you'll see that in January and February, sometimes we get up to about a 525,000 to 550,000 gallon a day average. And so that's the INI and the rainfall into the 32 acre secondary storage facility. So
okay, you changed units on me a couple of times there. Let's focus in on this 159 gallons per day average. If I took all the influent into the wastewater system over the last 10 years and divided it into the number of housing units, I'm going to come up with 159. Is that true? Is that a true statement?
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Okay. So it goes up in the winter, it goes down in the summer. But overall it averages 159. And you kind of glossed over, you said something quickly there that you're assuming that the development going forward is going to be very similar to what we have today and the usage will stay the same. And then I guess we're saying, you know, the last 10 years is average weather. I think it would be interesting to go back and look at a month by month analysis of the hundred of the gallons per day average and see the peaks and valleys because average, nothing is ever average, right? That's just
right.
Is different from me.
So there's a graph. So there's a graph that's on your website every month that shows the effluent level in the secondary storage where it peaks every year, which is usually April or May, depending on when the DAF fires up. And then it drops off usually till October 15th. You'll see it right at the bottom of the graph. And you'll be at less than 100. But if you go look at your monthly, like if you go, I'm going to just go back into the archive. But for example, we had an enormous rain year in 2016, 2017. So let's just go, you know, if I'm going to 2017 and I want to look at February of 17, I'm going to look for that report that we have the district puts in the packet every month. And I think what it's going to tell me is that my computer is slow, but I have it here.
John, is it in the board meeting packet? I'll bring it up.
Yeah, the 2015-2017 board packet.
2015-2000, I'm sorry, say that again, please. No,
February 15th, 2017, board packet.
Okay, February 15th.
It's in your archive. I went back all the way to 2012. From 2012 to 2020, I looked at every year. Every year, the average is very much
February of 2017 is where I'm going.
Yeah, if you go to February 15th, the board packet, not the agenda, but the packet.
Yeah, okay, what page?
I'm going to get you there. Just give me a second here.
All right, here.
It's so you have it open?
Yeah, I have it open. Let me pull it over here.
Can you show the
can you see it now?
Yeah, we can
okay,
see
it. Okay, go down to I can see it.
Staff reports.
Go down to the staff reports. Go down to water and drainage. There you go.
Go to 43, Amelia.
Okay, so
you have it.
So stop right there. Stop right there. There's your graph. The graph is at the beginning there. That is your secondary water and storage right there. Every month you'll see it change. But then go to just scroll down just a hair where it says due to the, okay, right there, sewer collection.
Can you zoom in a little bit, Amelia, please?
Okay, let me see if I can find this thing.
There you go. That'll make it better. Is that better? I'll read it. It says, due to the ground being saturated from the heavy rains, groundwater may seep through joints or cracks in manholes, lift stations, pipes, which is referred to as intrusion and infiltration, INI. Staff check for this in sewer manholes and lift stations in the sewer system. They went through unit one first and compiled the list of manholes and with INI. Staff worked with a contractor for 2 days to seal off the leaks in some of the worst areas of unit one. However, there is more to do. As time and weather permits, we will attempt to complete more INI inspections and repairs.
So that's so now if you go back the other direction to page two, go back up.
More?
Go back up a little bit more. So stop right there. See that says,
You want to see the graph?
Up. No. Go back up above the graphs. Just before the graphs, there's the calculation of what came into the, okay, so remember, we're in the heaviest rainfall we've had for the last 10 years. Stop right there. It says we brought in an average of 279 gallons per day per connection in, this would have been January, 0.716 million gallons a day. So that was the heaviest inflow to the plant on average. There were probably days in that month where we were over a million gallons a day, but the average for the month was 716. So you're bringing in, 200,000 gallons more than 30 is 6 million gallons. Divide that by an acre foot. You actually got 18 extra acre feet into the secondary storage during January than would be in the dry weather period. Okay. That's how the analysis was done, looking at how many winter gallons come in based on how many storms we had. 2017, you guys remember, it started raining on October 1st, and it didn't quit until late April. That was the wettest year I can remember going back until the miracle year of, what the heck was it, 86, 87?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you answered my question. In fact, I think you went way beyond what my question was. And I still think it would be interesting to take all this data and monthly come up with a gallons per day so that a person can see the peaks and valleys of the gallons per day and where that goes versus the 159. And I can probably figure out how to do that myself based on the information that's archived. So, Randy, on the volume of
secondary wastewater?
What's that?
On the volume of secondary wastewater, just below that, we're on page three, Amelia, yeah. Scroll down. You can take this stop right there. You can take this report that goes back to 17, 16, 15, 14. if you, you can take this one from 14 to 17, and then you can take the one from that we currently have from 17 to 21, and you'll see every month together for that 9 or 10 year period, which will almost tell you, you know, if that graph had, you know, more hash lines in there, you'd see what the monthly change is.
No, I get it. And there was not any homes built for a significant amount of time through there. And just recently, some homes would have to be added to get to this daily average. And I can do that. But let's get back to the bigger view of this and your request. I guess I haven't changed my mind. I think where all of this is obviously headed is that we do not have the amount of water, recycled water available that we thought we did when these reports were done. And I can see where this is headed. Martin makes a great point that we need to get a third eye on this to what'd you call it, Martin? The sanity check?
That's the idea.
I like that. I like that term. So let's talk about the timing of this. Tom, should we approve their request or agree with their request based on we want to see this third check done before we totally confirm this request.
Yeah, Randy, that
makes any sense at all?
It makes perfect sense, and that was the whole purpose of, if you go back up to the memo and the conclusion part of it, I recommended that we do some validation, that we move forward, and that if it turns out these calcs are all wrong and we're just going to be inundated with all this recycled water, we need to have a way to go backwards and revisit, you know, the decision. But it's pretty clear that that's not going to be the case. So I've reached out to Joe and asked him if he had a block of time whereby John and I can meet with him. John can go through all his calculations, and Joe can sit back and validate those numbers the way he does it. Joe's very good with water systems and drainage and calculating all those things. So I don't think this is outside of his area of expertise. So that's I think we can have this by the board meeting without much difficulty.
Okay. Well, I suggest then that the opinion of the committee is that their request be accepted, but with the condition that Joe looks at it and agrees that maybe not exactly with all the numbers, but that's where this is headed, and there's no sense on us spending $3 to $5 million in infrastructure to get rid of water that we won't have. Martin, comments? Do you agree with my assessment?
I do. You put it succinctly. That's good. Thanks.
I didn't think I said it that well, but I'll take it. Amelia, any further comments or questions, hands raised?
No comments, no chats, no hands raised.
Okay, very good. Thank you, gentlemen, for the time and effort that you put into that. Let's move on to discuss the request to sell water from Clementia to the West Ranch.
This is mine. I received a request through John Sullivan believe it was earlier this week, to allow the West Ranch to purchase water from Clementia. We would run it down the CIA ditch so they would be able to irrigate some crops they have that are within the district boundaries. I think that's what John said. And given the state of water in California, given that the water board just eliminated the ability for farmers almost statewide to pull water out of the groundwater system, I felt it would be important that I don't make this decision on my own, that we take our emergency water supply from Clementia and sell it without the board having some awareness, because to me, once this happens, there's probably going to be an outcry from the community of why are we giving so much water, even though we're selling it? Why are we taking water out of our system in the middle of what is this crazy drought that we're talking about? And a little bit about the drought, that Rancho Murrieta is almost a one-of-a-kind environment. There has never been a year when we haven't been able to fill up our reservoirs during the wintertime. There have been years where there wasn't a lot of time. This last year, we cut it pretty close using our less expensive pumping. But there's never been a year on record that we have, I don't think I'm wrong at all, where there wasn't enough water to fill up our reservoirs. And our reservoirs currently have about 2.5 years supply all told to supply the district with water. But in spite of that, there's this big issue with the state saying we're in this massive drought and we're cutting off farmers. We're cutting off a lot of people with even these pre-1914 riparian rights. They're just, the state says stop pulling water out of the groundwater system. So I didn't feel like it was something that I could just approve. So I wanted to have a discussion about it at this committee level. And and I don't think it needs to go to the board. I think it's a committee level discussion. So that's what the request is. I'm sure John is available to talk about what they're doing. I've requested to have a meeting with the rancher to visually see what they're talking about watering, because I don't exactly know what crops they have in the ground or if they're thinking about putting crops in the ground. So again, outside of my expertise, I wanted to discuss it in public. That's my
John. John, quantities, time frames. What are you requesting here?
So there's below the old racetrack, there's 200 acres of a field there. One is low value field grass that's not overly valuable, but there is a 92 acre field there that is growing alfalfa, and it has been irrigated through the CIA system and out of the lake that you see on the highway. And if you look at that lake that's on the highway today, you'll see it's just about empty. So I've asked Leland Snyder Jr. how many inches of water he needs to finish the irrigation on those 92 acres. So I'm just going to make a what if it takes 6 inches of water across 92 acres. We're talking about, 45 acre feet. If that is the case. Now, once we get done with that irrigation, they'll cut and bale all of that, and all of the rest of the season, the alfalfa will not get irrigated. So it would be important for the health of the field long term. to get water on it to finish this irrigation. I think the last time water got bought by the property was 1988. When we put that basin in, that energy dissipator, that was put in 1988 by Fred and I to be able to take water out of Clementia, put it in the ditch and run it down to the ranch to finish an irrigation of sugar beets. So I understand, you know, the sensitivity of the situation we're in. These are all riparian lands. There's no water in the river to speak of. Typically, if there was a low flow, we'd stick a pump in the river and we'd pump up to this field. But this is the first time I can remember the USGS gauge at Michigan Bar being 0.00. I think it was somewhere in 76, 77. And obviously, if you look today on the site, it says 1908 was 0.00. So maybe two times in the last 110 years, it's been this low. We all know we're either in a 50-year or a 100-year drought event, and we get the fact that domestic water takes precedence over irrigation water, and crop irrigation water and stock watering are higher value than irrigating landscaping. So I think with deference to the committee, I've been asked to make the request, and I don't know the exact quantity because they'll finish this irrigation out of the lake, and then they won't have to rotate for a couple, 3 weeks. So this isn't a request for today. And I recognize, you know, I know it's a difficult call. This is lands within the district, so it's, you know, they have the ability to be sold water. Just, I know it's a tough call, and I asked the other day.
So you're guessing 45 acre feet. Based on the 6 inches, how do we figure if we were to do this and take the water out of Clementia, how would we measure the amount of water that was actually taken out, and are they proposing to use our raw water usage fees?
Well, the number that I think would be reasonable is not what the source of supply, because the source of supply envisions that water to be pumped up to Calero. And that's how that rate's calculated. This is water that either sheet flows into Clementia or gets pumped into Clementia from the forebay. And I think, Tom, we got those numbers from SMUD. I don't think I've ever been able to exactly reconcile what that number is, but I think the pumping cost to get it into Clementia is about $39. So if it starts getting significantly more than that, obviously it'll affect the request. So
I guess I don't understand where you're coming Randy from. The water that you're talking about taking out of Clementia got there because it was pumped into Calero, number one. And then the second thing that occurs to me is those rates are based on our PG&E costs to pump when we use our smaller pumps. But if we're in this drought situation, I mean, maybe we assume that next winter we have to use our bigger pumps and the price goes up substantially. Is that, Tom, you want to address that?
Yeah, I'm going to try. This is, we do have figures on how much it costs with SMUD to utilize all the different configurations of the pumps, including pumping directly from our 125 horse pumps into Clementia. We worked with SMUD earlier to get all those rates. And so we have the calcs that we can use. It's about 30% less in electrical cost to move water from the four bay to Clementia versus from the four bay to Calero. And we could crunch nickels and dimes all we want. What we have right now is we have a rate for raw water of 44 cents per 100 cubic feet. And the amount of 45 acres at 44 cents per 100 cubic feet runs just about $7,600. And that's assuming that every drop of water that comes out of Clementia ends up in the pond that John is talking about. My guess is to get the 45 acre feet of water all the way down to those ponds, we're probably going to have to burn through maybe an additional 4 to 10 other acre feet because of whatever. But we're probably looking at about between $8,000 and $9,000 worth of raw water cost to do what John is talking about, restructure our rates based upon more information, better information on electrical charges and stuff. We'll take another study, and we can revise the study, and we intend to revise the study every couple of years anyway. But there's nothing we can do between now and next week when they're going to say we need the water or our crop's going to die. So my recommendation would be that we charge the rate that we set through our study before, and then we also increase the rate from the raw water from 11 cents per 100 cubic feet to 44 cents per 100 cubic feet based upon the studies and based upon the cost of transferring water through the CIA ditch. And that was approved as part of the recent budget. So my recommendation was if we were to sell water, we would sell at that rate. And the other question that somebody might want to ask is if we take 45 or let's just say 50 acre feet of water out of Clementia, what does that do to the overall volume? Well, Clementia can hold a total of 855 acre feet of water. So let's just take 50 acre feet out. That's going to be 1/19 of the total capacity of Clementia. And at this point in time, the available water that we have is certainly meeting our needs, and we're not in fear of not being able to fill up our reservoirs again next year. So I don't think that there's a major issue of water loss or water availability. It's just making sure that if we do decide it's okay to sell it, that we charge our rate as published.
I'm wondering if the correct analysis of what this does to our water supply shouldn't include Calero and Chesbro also, because we're taking 45 acre feet out of Clementia, but I think that's not the issue here. The issue here is what does it do to our overall water supply? And it sounds to me like if it's 1/20th of Clementia, it's probably insignificant in the overall. Martin, thoughts?
I have a thought. First, I'm not quite sure when the water wants to be used.
They want it next week.
Oh, next week. I personally think it's a should be a board decision. And then I did have another thought that is there room to exchange a water right for next year?
You know, I don't think the water rights are an issue, Martin. We have enough water right available to us to fill up our reservoirs without fail every year. And I didn't know how the horse trading would go with the water rights. So
I'm not changing, not the entire water rights. Is if we give you 45 acre feet this year, you give it back to us next year. Does that have any benefit?
I really don't know. I can't answer that question.
Well, I don't think. I think it's important enough that the board vote on it. I know that kind of screws up the timing, but I had one other question. Are there any other possible buyers in our district that we would have to address in the future if we did this?
I don't really think so. I know through the ditch we provide water to the Hutchinson Ranch and the Schneider Ranch, but they pull, you know, they have their own water rights and their properties are not within the district. I believe, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, the only farmland within the district is the stuff that the West Ranch owns. Is that correct?
That's right.
So let me say a couple other things. If you took the 45 acre feet of water is 1/100th. Within 2 or 3% of being 1/100th of the total capacity of water storage the district has. Where it sits and the total water capacity of what the district has today, I can't answer that question. Maybe Ron has that number available. I'm not going to put him on the spot. If he does, I'll ask him to chime in. And then another question might come up. Well, we have all this development going on. And it's becoming obvious, and I believe it was in the River Valley Times, that the Riverview folks at the peak of their grading project are going to want about 300,000 gallons of potable water per day to keep their dust under control as they do what they're going to do with their grading project. So that's a pretty heavy water demand, and that's going to be followed by a water demand for the residences east and north, not the residences east north, the retreat. East and North development, because they're getting ready to grade. But again, our water supply is good. We're in a situation that hardly anybody else is in. That unless they take away our water rights to pull water out of the Cosumnes River, which would be hard to ever imagine. We'll have our reservoirs full again next year. And we're not gonna run out of water while we're supplying the water to our residents and the water to the development that we're going to.
Can someone give me some perspective on?
I can give you some perspective, Randy, on the fact that we have another meeting starting in 12 minutes.
Yeah, no. $300,000 gallons a day for. Give it a number, 10 days, 20 days. How many acre feet is that?
I think in 10 days, that's 10 acre feet. Is that here, right, Ron?
Here we're talking about 45.
Yep. 300,000 is 325,852 is an acre foot. So it's just under an acre foot a day.
And our total capacity is 4,000. No, wait, I got it wrong, but. Yeah, 4,715 acre feet. That's our total capacity. What we have today, I can't tell you because I don't have the chart in front of me.
Well, I got to make Amelia happy here, so we got to cut this off and figure out a way forward here, Martin. To talk about getting board approval on this, Tom, is there a way we can? They want this water next week. Can we do a poll of the board members or what? First of all, what is your recommendation? You're telling us that your recommendation is to sell it to them and charge them $4, the $44 raw water charge. Is that correct?
Yeah, 44 cents per 100 acre feet charge, yes.
44 no, cents.
Per cubic, per 100 cubic feet of water.
And right.
Because I you know, I feel like we have the capacity.
Right. And we want to be good neighbors. To Martin's point about the board getting involved, I think that it's not unreasonable because of what you said earlier, Tom, about the farmers everywhere else in the state not being cut back on water and so on. And here we are supplying some farmers with some water. Tom, is there a way that we can get this done in the next week and somehow get the board involved?
We can make it happen. We'll do okay. Something. I'm going to consult with the Regional Water Authority real quick to get a temperature of that, because okay. If you do this, it becomes very public. And, you know, I'm sure Gail's on the line. Of course, there'll be something published in the River Valley Times, but, you know, you run the risk of this being picked up by media. And, you know, we have to gauge what the perception is. I understand being a good neighbor. I think that this is something we could do, you know. But it, again, we'll put something together and I'll get back. I'll work with board president maybe on the potential for scheduling somewhat of a special meeting. I will also check with Dick Shanahan to find out what kind of ground we're walking on right now.
Okay, great. So my watch says we've got a little less than 9 minutes. Martin, are you okay with that?
Yeah, to my point about trading the water for another day, I don't think the board's interested in making $8,000 or $9,000. I think it's more important for the district to have access to the water, not actually sell it. We can have it for another day. That's actually more important than money, I think.
But once we fill up our reservoirs over the winter, what good is the rights to 45 acre
feet? You fill up Lake Joaquin if you had to improve the water quality, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. I got you. All right, Tom, I think you got your marching orders on that. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. We are on to director and staff comments. Staff first. Anything?
Nope. Not for me.
Amelia, any hands? Chats?
Hands, and Ron and Paula don't look like they have any comments.
Okay. Martin, anything?
I do, but it's kind of late. But let me just tell you two things maybe we could talk about another day. Laguna Joaquin update, and maybe you could give us a refresher sometime about the chlorine shortage that was reported last time. And the possibility of having some sort of flow alert on the piping that would have alerted us last time to this loss of water. Other than that, I think we got to call it good.
Okay, thank you. And I have nothing. Amelia, you can thank me later for having no comments.
I'll thank you now. I have time for that.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining this morning. A lot of great information, and we are adjourned. Have a great day.
Have a great day.
Thank you.